What I'm going to talk a little bit about this morning is how we set up the research study and how it's going and what we're beginning to learn. It's based on, as Marge said, historically, that the 1994 genocide resulted in severe trauma for those who survived, including rape, but a lot of witnessing. So what we wanted to do was add an arm to the research that would help us look at what exactly did the women survive, how is it impacting them, and what kind of interaction might that have with their diagnosis of being HIV positive or their non-diagnosis, what's going on. So in deciding how to do this, we selected the Harvard Trauma Questionnaire. And the reason we selected that, it's an inventory that was developed by a psychiatrist at Harvard, Rich Malika, and it's been used with 20 different post-trauma populations. And it's shown reliability and validity across cultures in different conflicts, and it's really broad-based. So we decided we would use this. The first 6 months involved translation and adaptation. So we had to go through each section, and we had a team of three. We utilized the Harvard, there's a torture treatment center in Kigali, so I partnered with them, and three of their staff took the instrument and translated it from English version to French to Kinyarwanda. Then three other staff took it and translated it back from Kinyarwanda to French to English. And then we took the Kinyarwanda translation and met with focus groups. Many of the groups were trauma counselors from the different associations, and we went over it item by item, adapting it for Rwanda. What are the descriptors? What was what the women's experience? So an example would be there was an instrument used called an obuhiru, which was like a club with spiky things at the end. So we had to make sure that that was in it. The other thing that we needed to do was, since it was in Kinyarwanda, the way I think about the language is it's very utilitarian. It's a useful language for describing activities of daily life. It is not a useful language for labeling. So a lot of trauma symptoms we needed to describe. So in these focus groups, I was up doing a lot of role playing. So startle response, there isn't a Kinyarwanda word for startle response. So I would act out what I meant, and they were like, oh, okay. So then we would get a descriptor. So we went through this process. It was piloted on a torture survivor population, got feedback from the participants and the administrator of it, made some more changes, and then we piloted on a small sample of women from the associations, and then it was, I guess as good as it was going to get to go. So I just described all this to you. And as Marge pointed out, so the initial visit one, we had 949 participants. 227 of them were HIV negative, and 722 were positive. Again, the ages were really in the mid-30s through 40s. Some about a third were married, and about half were widows. Very poor women. Not a lot of employment, only about 25% had a meet. And by employment, it's not like, they sell things. They find some eggs and sell them. That's the kind of employment. It's very daily oriented rather than, stable employment as we would think about it here. School, again, minimal. A lot of these women were adolescents, older children when the genocide occurred. Therefore, their schooling was interrupted. So they had very minimal primary education. So as you see, the ability to read, like two-thirds of the women admitted that they had little, if any, ability to read. And then here we see the BMI between the HIV and HIV, the positive and the negative, as well as the CD4 counts, where you see the differences. trauma events. And what I'd like to say is we trained a group of trauma counselors to conduct this interview. One of the nice things about the Harvard Trauma Questionnaire is you don't have to be a psychologist or a clinical social worker to administer it. You can train people. And so in Rwanda, after the genocide, there was a movement because, actually, if you go there now, I personally, when I arrived in September of 2004, I felt the trauma was palpable when I got off the plane. It was like still just in the air. So what the response was after the genocide, since many people either fled or were killed, there wasn't a professional, employment level of mental health. You know, it wasn't, you know, there wasn't much before the genocide, and after there was none. So the response was is to provide training and create a new level of staff, of mental health staff, which is trauma counselors. So essentially now there is an organization called the Association of Rwandan Trauma Counselors. Most of the counselors have a secondary education, and then anywhere from 3 months to 12 months of training in trauma counseling. So it's really more a peer counseling movement. And the 12 months of training results in a certification. So what we did with having trauma counselors administer the Harvard Trauma Questionnaire, we were hoping that it would be therapeutic. And that is really the intention of the instrument, is this is not an intervention. This was part of a research project. So wanting to do something that wouldn't necessarily re-traumatize, but provide a therapeutic interaction. And that's why we had the trauma counselors conducting the interviews. And so in there, asking questions, we wanted to know about trauma events. And if you see across this, like most of the women lived through the genocide, that they were exposed to the situation of war. 80%+ experienced deprivation of food and water for that extended period of time, and lack of access to medical care. You know, anywhere from, you know, 70 to 75% witnessed a family member or loved one be murdered. A lot of displacement went on. People lost things. They were victimized through people taking their belongings. They were without shelter. They watched people being beaten. They lost their property. They don't know where friends and family are. There are disappearances. And you can see that in our group, it was approximately 50% of both the HIV negative and HIV positive women were raped during the genocide, and this is during the genocide. So as we saw, of how many events did someone experience during the genocide, that the HIV negative women actually had one more traumatic event than the HIV positive. So HIV is there, but the reality for women who were in Rwanda in 1994 and afterwards is that you were very vulnerable and exposed and victimized by violence. Another thing the reason we like the Harvard Trauma Questionnaire is it's really more of like brain injury than head injury, of the impact of starvation on the brain, beatings to the head, you know, suffocation. That out of the 946 women who participated in Visit 1, you know, most of them, you know, close to 70% had conditions of starvation for an extended period, and, you know, another subset of them each experienced other traumatic injury that might affect their brain functioning. Some events are... you know, what's the difference between genocide and torture, or what's the difference between war and torture? You know, it all to me becomes sort of Dali-esque. But the reality is we wanted to tease out if women were taken from the community. You know, war and genocide happens in community. It's happening to everyone around you. Some women were taken out of community. actually have more information than this slide shows, but I didn't get it in time for the uploading. But I wanted to just show to you that with scoring for PTSD, there are three categories that are essential to getting a diagnosis of post-traumatic stress disorder. You must have re-experiencing symptoms, where that's the intrusive thoughts and memories, flashbacks, recurring nightmares. You have to have avoidance, so feeling detached, like you're watching yourself go through the motions of daily life. Avoiding being around people or things or situations that remind you about the trauma. And then also hyperarousal, trouble sleeping, feeling on guard, having startle reaction, feeling really irritable and unable to deal with things that didn't used to bother you. In the Harvard Trauma Questionnaire, a score of 2.0, once you add up everything, anything with 2.0 greater meets the criteria for a diagnosis of post-traumatic stress disorder. So if you just look at the all sample, you can see that most of the symptoms were 2 or greater. So what we found in the population of all, the HIV positive and negative, is about 60% of the women met the criteria for post-traumatic stress disorder. If you look at the HIV negative, so just the women who had one more trauma event than the others, it was 65%. And for the HIV positive women, it was 58%. So there, you know, there was a little bit of difference between HIV positive and negative, which was surprised us. But I think the bottom line was everyone suffered and experienced trauma. And just comparatively, so we're talking about, this data was collected 12 years after the genocide. And if we look at it comparatively with other studies where people, populations have suffered genocide, the Indochinese refugees in 1992, they had 50, the average number of symptoms in a study done in 1992 was 15. The same with Cambodians in a study done in 2005, 15 symptoms was normal for an individual. Guatemalans was 8 experienced, 9, close to 8 observed. Bosnians, this surprised me that in 1999 Malika's done longitudinal work with Bosnian refugee groups, that they have less symptoms. But the Rwandan women, you can see, are right up there. That our study showed that anywhere from 13 to 14 events of trauma. So the PTSD scores, again, you know, this is just a couple of studies I was able to find that in Vietnamese political detainees, the PTSD with 2.0 being meets the criteria, 1.89. In Afghanistan recently, 1.92, but again, our study, the average was 2.31 for the score. Other studies of just looking, Cambodians who received a diagnosis of PTSD, 62%, Bosnians about 26%, other post-conflict settings where they've done, now this isn't all using, if the column on the right is what instrument was used. So the Bosnians, they did use the Harvard Trauma Questionnaire. But in others, there's PTSD checklists made for civilians, and then these other composite international listings. But again, if at the bottom two, the Rwandan communities, there was a study done that was specifically around a rural area in the northwest region of Rwanda, where they did a community setting where they found that about 25% of the women met men and women met the criteria for PTSD. Okay. Our population is urban Kigali, and we're seeing a higher rate of PTSD. Now, there are other factors, of course. If we look at who did we look at, it was pretty much a younger, 30s to early 40s, underemployed, unemployed, frequently widowed, half the women were widows, and they're poor with very little education. So we're talking about an urban situation of poverty and know, it's HIV, but also we saw that the HIV negative women were equally traumatized, and that there's just a high rate of PTSD among this population 12 years after the genocide. Now, one of the things is we have to acknowledge that because we're working with associations, who were they referring to us? And it might have been that they were referring to us, the most traumatized women, wanting them to access care. So what we then started our actual programming with is this information about how important it is to integrate mental health services into primary care. And so out of that, we've been able to develop a program, the family program, which is funded by the Ronald McDonald Foundation, where women with HIV who have one or more children infected with HIV and other children affected by HIV access not only medical care, but on-site at our medical clinics, there are trauma counselors and then there's a supervising psychologist who are receiving referrals and making interventions and doing health education talks and providing activities for the children so that the mothers can talk with the counselors in the waiting area. And we really feel like that's the way we're going to have to go in providing mental health care, which is desperately